This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the RPM Subteam for Trademark Claims, taking place on the 19th of December 2018 at 1700 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no one, I would like to thank everyone for joining and remind you all to please state your name before speaking for a recording purpose and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thank you so much, Sherry, and this is Julie Hedlund from staff, and welcome all, and thank you for joining us today. Let me go ahead and run through the agenda, and I'll just note that I am acting leader of this call because we don't currently have a sub-team leader. Hopefully we'll be able to rectify that soon. So on the agenda, we have reviewing the agenda and statements of interest, then selecting sub-team leader, then we'll begin the survey analysis, and we've gone ahead and put up there the action item that was the homework for the sub-team from last week's Wednesday call. And then any other business. Let me ask if anyone has any other business. And Kathy, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Julie. This is Kathy Kleinman. And I thought maybe we should talk about the chairing for a little bit because we did have nominations last week. And we did have responses, but I thought, Julie, maybe you could bring us up to date kind of on where we are with that and where we're going.
And thank you, Kathy. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. Actually, I was just running through the agenda, and now we will go ahead and start at the top of the agenda. And I'll just note that the item that you mentioned is item number two on the agenda. But to go to the first item on the agenda, we've reviewed the agenda, and now may I ask if anybody has any changes to their statements of interest?
Hi, Julie. It's Susan Payne. Yes, I do. It's not a major change, but I am now the secretary of the IPC, so I just made a change to my SOI.
And I'm sorry, what was the could you repeat that, the change? I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch it.
Sorry. I've just taken up the post of the secretary for the IPC. So I made a change to my SOI.
Okay. Thank you. I heard IPC, and I heard that you had a change, but I didn't hear the word secretary. Now I got it. Thank you very much, and I've noted that. Appreciate it. I'm not seeing any other hands. So then we shall go to item number two for selecting the sub-team leader. May I ask who just joined?
Hey, Julie, it's Claudio.
Hi, Claudio. Thanks for joining. And I assume you're only on the audio bridge. Is that correct?
Correct.
And to help us identify you on the phone list, is your number the 4330? Ending in 4330?
8208.
Can I ask who is the number ending in 4330?
Yeah, that's Michael Graham.
Oh, thank you very much, Michael. We'll make a note. Appreciate it. So back to agenda item number two. And pardon me, but may I ask who just joined? Is that Martin rejoining by any chance? Anyway, I'll go ahead and let Terry sort that out. So we'll go again back to agenda item two. And selecting the sub-team leader, as you may recall, we had a couple of nominations. Last week, Griffin Barnett and Christine Durain, but as you noted on the list, they both have indicated they are unable to accept those nominations, but we did just have yesterday a volunteer, Martin Silva Valente, has volunteered to co-chair. We do not have any other volunteers, but let me ask if we do have any other volunteers now that we're on this item. I'll just pause and see if there's any responses or any hands up. And also let me ask if there are any comments concerning Martin's volunteering for co-chair. And Martin, please go ahead. And Martin, if you're speaking, we can't hear you. I'm not hearing Martin. Is anybody else hearing Martin?
And this is Terry. Martin, I said.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you, Martin.
Okay, thank you very much. No one was doing it, but of course, I don't think I'm the perfect fit for chair. So it would be great if someone more experienced chairing this group would also join, we could be co-chairs and we can share the burden. But of course, come with me if no one else can put the workload. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Martin. It was a little bit hard to hear you, at least from my but I think you were saying that you were willing to co-chair the group, and if there were other volunteers, you'd be willing to. Yes. Yeah, thank you very much for that. Confirming that, Kathy in the chat, looking for others to share the co-chairing. Let me see if we have any other volunteers. I'm not seeing other volunteers. How would the subgroup like to proceed? We have one volunteer, but someone who, you know, Martin would like to share the duties. Shall we extend the period for asking for volunteers, or Martin, are you willing to take the position on your own if accepted by the subgroup?
If no one else is willing to take it, yes, of course, I can take it.
Okay, so Martin is willing to take the position of chairing the subgroup on his own if there are no other volunteers. But Kathy Kleinman is suggesting to keep it open for a few days. Now, I'll note that for a few days basically runs us into the holiday, and ICANN offices are actually closed as of close of business on this Friday, the 21st. So that would essentially extend the period up until the beginning of the new year. And I see Phil Corwin has his hand up. Phil, please.
Yeah, thanks. Phil here. Let me say this in a personal capacity. I have no particular advantage on this being a co-chair of the full working group. I would suggest we keep the period open. They'll close the business Friday, which is when ICANN offices close for the year. I appreciate Martin stepping up to the plate and agreeing to chair. He's indicated he'd like to share that job with someone, and just for the information of those who may be considering it or maybe not understand what's involved or think it's too burdensome, it's basically an administrative post to lead the calls. I don't know if there'll be any separate planning calls, but probably most of the work is going to be done by email. It's just leading discussion and making sure that there's a complete discussion of issues as they come up, working with staff to plan the agenda for the next call, and having first crack at the sub-team report to the full working group, and then sharing it with the rest of the working group to finalize it. So not particularly burdensome, primarily administrative, so you're not supposed to be steering things one way or the other. So just if anyone else wants to help Martin out, I'd appreciate everyone thinking about that, and we have the next 48 hours and then some to decide if someone else wants to share that responsibility with him. Thanks very much.
And thank you very much, Phil, for that. Then staff has taken the action item to keep the nomination period open until COB Friday, 21st of December. And then depending on the outcome there, we'll see where we stand as of once the we as of the next call. So then unless there are any objections, staff is going to suggest that we help run this call from this point forward. And then hopefully we'll start up the next call with the new co-chairs. I'm just looking to see if there are any objections to staff running the call from this point.
Julie, it's Claudio. Can I give any chair?
Claudio, please go ahead.
Yes, and no objections at all. But I just had a quick question. I couldn't remember if the co-chairs have sent an email to the full list with you know, sort of a request for the co-chairs. I know we've talked about it on the sub-team calls, but you know, there's a broader group on the working group, and I think a lot of the people haven't joined the sub-teams, and so I just wasn't sure if notice went out to them that we're looking for volunteers.
Well, thank you for that, Claudia. This is Julie Hedlin from staff. The request for nominations went to each of the subgroups because the thinking was that it would be the subgroup, because the co-chair would need to be a member of the subgroup. So while we can send the nomination to the full working group, I think we'll need to clarify that anyone who is nominated or anyone who volunteers would need to be a member of the subgroup. So I guess if they weren't already, they would need to join one of the subgroups. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and forward it also to the full, subgroup. And let me make a note of that in one moment. Full working group, I mean. And then see if that helps to get responses. So let me go ahead and put into the chat room the tool that we're using for this discussion, the link. Actually, it looks like maybe Ariel might be, yep, Ariel's doing that. Thank you very much. Just as a reminder, the action item from the last call was to analyze whether and how the data in rows 12 through 27 of the actual and potential registrants tab answer the agreed question 1 and its sub-questions A and B in this spreadsheet that you see before you and also at that link. And I've got in the notes pod so that I hope you can see it, the question 1 from the final charter questions for trademark claims. And I'll just read that here. Is the trademark claims service having its intended effect? Consider the following questions specifically in the context both of a claims notice as well as a notice of registered name. A. Is the Trademark Claims Service having its intended effect of deterring bad faith registrations and providing claims notice to domain name applicants? And B. Is the Trademark Claims Service having any unintended consequences such as deterring good faith domain name applications? And we'll just note that staff is sharing the screen, but it's probably easier if you go to the link so that you can see things better. And I note that George Kirikos has his hand up. Please go ahead, George.
Yeah, George Kirikos, the transcript. Yeah, I was curious about what exactly how we're going to do today and in future weeks, because the homework assignment was to look at just the tab for the actual potential registrants, but other tabs also impact these questions. So I don't know if we're going to go to the same question, but other tabs of the spreadsheet in the future, or we're going to consider this question answered just on the basis of this one tab. So I'd appreciate other people's thoughts on that, because obviously the other tabs do impact the answer to this, so we can't just answer the question through the one tab alone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. I'm just noting that there are some audio issues. Susan Payne is noting audio cutting out. Christine Durain is saying it's fine. I'm wondering, let's just see if others are having issues. I'm wondering, Susan, if perhaps we can dial out to you. Yeah, it seems that others are not hearing audio problems. So with respect to your question, George, I thought we checked that it was only rows 12 through 27 of this tab that applied to that question. I mean, some of the other tabs actually do not have any trademark related data relating to the trademark to the specific question. But if you would like to point us to where you think material in other tabs applies, that would be most helpful. I see two people in the queue. I see Kathy Kleinman first and then George. Kathy, please.
Okay. This is Kathy, and hopefully we won't spend too long on procedural questions so we can dive into the data. I think the answer to George's question, if I heard it properly, is that we're not bound, and tell me if you disagree, because in subteams, most people know, but in subteams, co-chairs participate just as regular members of the subteam, which is why we don't share. But it's my understanding that our job now is to dig into this data and put in what we find. There's a column for finding, comments from the subteam. So what data is relevant to the question? But this isn't the only data relevant to these revised charter questions. There is other data collected around Johannesburg, data collected earlier, data collected from earlier analysis group reports. But staff has asked us, and the co-chairs have agreed, that, you know, we're going to focus on this data right now, but it doesn't bar anything else. We're not trying to answer the charter questions yet. We're trying to find data that sheds light on them, and we're starting with this data that we work so hard to get. But it's not exclusive. It's inclusive. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. George Kirikos, please.
Yeah, George Kirikos again. Just to talk about which other tabs refer to the claims, I would look at all the registry and registrant tabs. For example, there's the registry hyphen Q26 tab. You have to scroll right a bit to get to it. There are a whole bunch of columns talking about the higher costs on registries of implementing a claims period, which might be considered an unintended consequence. Same for the registrar Q4I tab. There was a spoke about how the costs would significantly decrease if the claims were eliminated. So these, I think, were related to answering this question. And so, and also there were obviously trademark owner tabs as well that would apply. But I don't think this one tab alone captures everything. So hopefully we'll get to those future tabs later and then go back to these questions. Thank you.
Thank you, George. I'm going to go to Christine Durain, and then I'm going to ask Ariel Leung to speak to this as well. Christine, please, and then Ariel.
Thank you. This is Christine Durain from the transcript. So I know I made it a proposal last week, and I thought that there was pretty good agreement around it, but maybe not. There's a lot of debate as to how valuable this data is. And the ultimate goal of this entire subteam is to answer the questions. And so I've proposed, and we need to spend a moment on procedure here, but I have proposed that we go into this with the goal of answering the questions. And to George's point, the answering the questions involves looking across all tabs to which the question might relate, the question relates. And that will include looking at data or I think we talked about, you know, if there were blogs or whatever was out there. Plus our own knowledge. I mean, I think most of us have determined that the data is more or less reflective of our lived experiences, even if it's not, you know, super ultra, you know, reproducible and scientific. So I propose from a procedural standpoint that we do actually look at answering the questions. If the goal in 6 weeks is to come up with some sort of an initial report, our initial report means we start by answering the questions. And so I think to go through and separate out question one, is a trademark claim service having its intended effect? We discuss the survey data for actual and potential respondents. Then we get through all the other questions, and then we go through them all again for trademark owners. Then we go through them all again for registries and registrars. Then we have to go through them all again for any other data that we might have that's not part of the survey, including I think people have talked about proposals for different ideas. So that's now we've rehashed and rehashed and rehashed these questions 4 or 5 times. I propose one time, get through the question as much as possible. There may be some circling back because specifically charter question one is big and all-encompassing. But I think to the extent we can, we should try to get through it all in one pass, even if a pass takes more than a meeting or two. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. This is Julie Headland from staff. And I think we did capture in the notes from last call that the goal was to, yes, answer the questions using the data that we have, not just the data in the survey, but other data as well, and ideally all in one pass. Now, one action that staff took away from last week was to think about how we might be able to create a tool that also matches the other data that's been collected with the questions. And we do continue to have an action item on that. It's something that we're working on. It's something that will take some time. So apologies that it's not something that we can have ready for today. And thank you, George Kirkos, for putting your thoughts in the chat as far as other cells that may apply. At this point, I'm going to ask Ariel Leung for any comments she may have from staff. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Julie. This is Ariel Leung for the record. Just additional comment on how we organized the table, and we mentioned that before. Part of questions match to the survey questions and match to the subteam's draft question, and that's based on the original data request table, and that's why you see in the question one, question three on the registrant tab is where they are. We just want to bring some organization to the myriad of information so that the subteam can go through the information in an organized way. And in fact, as to what Christine mentioned, that staff office support, that it will be a several rounds perhaps to go through all the data, but at least we bring some organization here and then you can start from somewhere. So that's the comment I want to make here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ariel. And George Kirsten is saying also stuff in the TM owner tabs, okay, F52. We'll make a note of that as well. George and Christine Durain, I see you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Christine. So I'm going to propose a path forward for the rest of this call. We have 30 minutes left. Question one, the first part, is an overarching question that we're probably not going to answer until we get pretty close to the end. So let's look at, I propose that we look at question 1A, which is the Trademark Claim Service having its intended effect of deterring registrations and providing claims notice to domain names applicants? We can discuss the data on the actual potential registrants tab, but in the event that that's exhausted, I vote to move right on to reviewing the Trademark and Brand Owners tab, which I've done, and I know I'm sure George and others have done as well. I mean, we start that discussion. We've got 30 minutes to discuss what we could put in this. So if we're drafting this initial report, what will we say? Will we say that the Trademark Claim Service is having its intended effect? Is it being a deterrent and notifying domain name applicants of claims? And will we put that in the report or will we not? And if no, we're not, what will we put? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. That's extremely helpful. Does anybody have any objections to proceeding as suggested for the remaining 30 minutes of this call? Then let's go ahead and look at A. Is the Trademark Claim Service having its intended effect of deterring bad faith registrations and providing claims notice to domain name applicants? And George Kirikos, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, if we go to the tab for the actual potential registrants, I guess the one that we have the homework on, cells E12 and F12, I think, answer the second part of that question, which is, are people receiving the claims notices, which is, to no surprise, an easy answer. So hopefully we have unanimity that people are receiving the claims notices. But the first part of that question, whether it's deterring bad faith registrations, I think it's a lot harder to answer that question because in the survey, it doesn't really tell us what kind of domain names they were attempting to register, whether they were good faith or bad faith. So I think the answer to the first part of A is kind of related to the second part of the 1B, namely whether it's having unintended consequences because we don't know, we can't differentiate between good faith and bad faith registrations based on this survey response. Although we can kind of get a look at how to answer that question based on those most frequently requested claims notices, most frequently requested domains, which is the top 10 strings from the March 2017 analysis group report. So we know that the top 10 terms were domains like one and hotels and generic, commonly used terms that have multiple good faith uses. And so that's, I think, where we're going to have difficulty as to whether the bad faith and the good faith registrations are being attempted. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George. And Christine Durain, please.
Hi, thanks, Christine, for the transcript. Just hold on for 1 second because I'm switching screens because I wrote some stuff yesterday while I was doing my homework. And I think with respect to 1A, what I kind of wrote, and I didn't see until today's staff suggestion that we circulate our proposal text via email, and I think that's a really great idea because it allows people to really think about what's being said. And maybe we can, by doing that, we can sort of start formulating a response as we go. I mean, sort of part of subpro is sort of drafting, staff takes notes, and that's part of the drafting exercise for the initial report. So I think I sort of agree with Georgia on this. I mean, the data is pretty inconclusive, especially from domain name, from actual and potential registrants, right? Because honestly, no one's going to say, yeah, I was going to be a bad faith registrant, and I decided not to. I mean, right? I mean, no one's going to identify as that. So it really comes down to really where that trademark and brand owner data comes from, which is, you know, how many sort of UDRP URS cases are they seeing that, you know, are they seeing more or less than expected, you know, more or less compared to .com, those sorts of questions. I honestly, I mean, spoiler alert, I think that's also pretty inconclusive. I do note that one, not row 12, but one of the applicants, one of the survey respondents did say, although no one selected a trademark reason for continuing through to register the domain name. So no one said, yes, I'm a good faith registrant. One respondent later did say that it analyzed its intended use against the claims notice data. So that was kind of interesting. So that, I think, provides only one solitary data point that the notice may be causing some registrants to think twice before registering a trademark term, which is really what I think is the desired impact. We don't want people to just not register a term because it's a trademark necessarily. We just want them to think twice. You know, is this going to be a violating, the way I'm going to use this is going to infringe on someone else's mark? And if the answer is no, regardless of whether you continue or don't continue, I think that's really the ultimate goal. So I think that the answer, the initial report for recommendation 1A, at least as far as I've looked at the data from the various respondents, is that it's inconclusive based on data, but we have some evidence that it does seem to be deterring some people, or at least causing some people to think twice. I'm happy to just throw that out there as a means of launching discussion.
Thank you very much, Christine. That's very helpful. And Kathy Kleinman, please.
Great, thanks. This is Kathy. And take a look at the tab at the bottom, Registrant Q11. If you were presented with this notice, and this is deep data, so I've been playing with it for a little while, and thanks to Ariel for putting it together. So question 11, if you were presented with this notice when attempting to register this domain name for the following purposes, what would you do? And what I wanted to point out is the columns that say stop trying to register the name, stop for now, do some research and maybe come back, stop and talk to a lawyer first, and other. Although only one potential registrant filled in other, and they said cry. But if you look at the numbers, and I haven't added them up, and we don't have totals here, you see an awful lot of people stopping. This may get to 1B at a certain point, but right now we're seeing a lot of people stopping. And so I wanted to point that out because I think it really does give us some insight into whether, to the question that Christine was asking, which is, you know, are people stopping and thinking? And I think the answer in this tab says yes, they are. Thanks.
And thank you very much. And yeah, I see that, yes. So I think you're referring to Registrant Q11. So I'll make a note of that. Thank you, Kathy. Rebecca Tushnet, please.
Rebecca Tushnet. I'd certainly agree with Susan's initial description, except I would just say that we know there seems to be a fair amount of deterrence going on. We just don't know what it is. Certainly not from the survey, actually, not really from the other stuff that we've looked at so far. We know there's deterrence, but we don't know who's being deterred and what would have happened. And so as long as we're clear on that, I think we could reach consensus on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rebecca. And Susan Payne, please.
Yes, sorry, took a while to get off mute. Susan Payne here. I'm not quite sure where Kathy was going with her comments and apologies. So I'm not entirely sure whether I'm agreeing with her or disagreeing with her, but I think, you know, she's absolutely right. We can look at these results and see that some people stop. Now, some of them say they would stop altogether. A number of them say, I would stop and do something before I decide whether to go forward. So that's not really stop, is it? That's pause and take some advice or pause and do some research. Now, isn't that exactly what the point of this is? So I wasn't clear whether Kathy was trying to suggest that this means people are being put off from registering or whether, in fact, this is a demonstration, as I would argue, that actually the claims notice is doing entirely what it's supposed to in having people pause and consider whether they should go forward with the domain registration or not.
Thank you very much, Susan. And I see Kathy Kleinman, please.
And I think I'm in complete agreement with Susan. So for 1A, is it having its intended effect? Are people stopping and pausing, to use Christine's revised question? I think the answer is yes. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kathy. And I think, okay. And Christine is saying, and I'm not going to try to read all the chat, we probably don't need, this could be a question that we put out for public comment, plus one to Susan. And Rebecca saying, to be clear, there are a range of responses. Some groups just stop, some stop and research. We don't know from the survey the distribution within those groups. So may I suggest, I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand was up. Christine Doreen, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. I was going to apologize. I'm guilty also of this, but I agree. We need to, Kathy, just put in the chat. Let's finish the question. Let's stay on 1A to the extent we can. I think it sounds like we may. I'm going to pat ourselves on the back for 12 seconds here. We may have come to an initial, you know, comment that we could make an A that would be go into our initial report, which is that we cautiously think that there is some sort of a deterrence going on to bad faith registrants, not yet talking about collateral damage in 1B. And so if that seems to be a rough place to start with on 1A, I think we can move to 1B. But I've also been guilty just in the chat of moving on to 1B, and I apologize.
Well, thank you very much, Christine. And I have George Kirkos, please.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is George Kirkos for the transcript. I'm not sure if this is on the same point that Susan's trying to raise in chat. But I think what we can say definitively is that it's deterring registrations, period. But, you know, it's deterring perhaps both good faith and bad faith registrations. I don't know if that's something that people would agree on, because it seems some people don't agree that it's affecting, you know, good faith registrations for 1B. But I would combine them and say it's affecting registrations in total. But to answer whether it's deferring bad faith registrations, I think it needs to look at other elements of the data that we have, like the strings that are being applied for or being attempted to be registered, and perhaps registration rates outside the claims period, which we haven't really looked at or collected the data for. Thanks.
Thank you, George. This is Julie Helen from staff. I think maybe you were breaking up for a little bit of that, but I think we tried to get that in the notes. And just some things from the chat. Susan Payne is saying, George, we don't know for sure bad faith, so your inference is not supported. Cynthia King says, I don't think we can infer intimidation. I see a simple thought process now that I know that there's a potential trademark issue. Should I proceed or look at alternatives? And again, Michael Graham says, I don't think we can presume the type of registration affected. Okay, Cynthia is having trouble with audio. So thank you, Cynthia. We'll get a dial out to you. There's a lot going on in chat, so I'm not going to try to read it all out. I have several people in the queue. So let me go to the queue. George Kirkos first, then Susan Payne, then Rebecca Tushnet. George, please.
Yeah, George again. George Kirkos. Somebody said in the chat that you can't infer intimidation. You know, that's right in E23 and F23 that people are finding the noses intimidating. So I don't know why people are disagreeing with that. Thanks.
And I'm sorry, you were referencing E23. Did I hear that correctly, George?
George, again, yeah, E23 and F23. No, you've got
E and F23. Thank you.
Yeah.
Susan Payne, please. Susan, if you're speaking, we can't hear you.
Sorry, I'm having trouble with my different audio feeds. I'm putting my hand down, sorry. I'm good, pausing.
Thank you. Noted. Christine Doreen, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. Way to go, Susan. I'm looping in the word pause again. Really appreciate that. I put it already in the chat, but I'll say it again online here. I think that when we think about what we would draft in this initial report, I think we can say that we all agree that a certain number of, on 1B, but a certain number of potential good faith registrants might be and we can use the word deterred, intimidated, chilled, whatever you want to say. It probably varies a lot on their use. You know, a chilled speech would be a speech that was going to be sort of like sort of protected free speech. Intimidated might be someone who was just going to register a domain name for fun. Deterred would be someone who was going to register it in bad faith. So it kind of depends on their use, right? But the point I think I'm trying to make is that when we write our initial report, we don't necessarily, and I'm taking a page out of the subpro here, but we don't have to have a firm recommendation for every single section. We can say something like, for 1B, the working group reviewed the available data, our own, you know, user inferences from across the industry and all of our collective, you know, decades and decades of experience, and we really believe that probably some users are deterred. Could this be a result of the actual wording? We're going to get to that later. And if so, we recommend this to the wording. Is there some, what does the community think about that threshold? Because there's going to be a certain amount of collateral damage for every single thing we do. Every statute, everything that's done has a certain amount of collateral damage. So what is the tolerable threshold that the community believes is fine with respect to sort of accidentally not letting someone with really good intentions get through? Versus, you know, the cost benefit of, you know, costing brand owners, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So I think that there's a way to work through this language here that says, this is what we've noticed. This is what we think. What does the community say? And then we kind of move on. I don't think we have to decide it at this point. For the final report, we do. For the initial report, I think we get to ask a few questions, and please correct me if I'm wrong. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Christine. And this is Julie Hedlund from staff, just on your last point. In the initial report, we can have, you know, several different levels of deliberations. We can have recommendations. We could have proposals that are discussed. And we can have questions that are directed at the community to answer in the public comment forum. So if we think there's something we want more information on from the community, we can pose it as a question. And now I have two people in queue, Greg Shatton and Kathy Kleinman. Greg, please.
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton for the record. Going back to the question of quote-unquote intimidation, I think that we've recognized since the beginning that the form is a little,
let's say, harsh or overbearing, formalistic, whatever you want to call it. I think Kathy Kleinman and Paul McGrady were the primary drafters of it way back when, and you know, they agree it could be a little kinder and gentler. I think we all agree. I think that's all that's meant by intimidating. You know, it's a legal notice, and it's somewhat stiffly worded. I don't think this means that people were intimidated from proceeding. So I think we need to be careful what we infer and what we claim is meant by some of the language here. So it's not a question of believing or disbelieving what's in the data, but rather of trying to understand what the data is telling us. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Kathy Kleinman, please.
Hi, it's Kathy. It's true. It's my fault and Paul's. We take the blame for the trademark claims notice. We had no focus groups. We can do better. I agree. Okay, to what Christine said, Christine, I'm going to respectfully disagree. Normally, I agree with everything you say, but I don't agree here. I think we're biting off more than we can chew, and that has to do with answering the revised charter questions on the first deep dive pass into the data. I think our job might be easier if we look at the question and say, the revised charter question, so 1A, and say, what data are we looking at that sheds light on the answer to this question? We can even put down preliminary conclusions and differences that we're having, like on the issue of intimidation. But really, what data is it that sheds light on this question? We have another table that staff has prepared that actually has a column just for that. And so this will be a lot of the data, but there may be other pieces of data as well. And then on the second pass, maybe when we reach the end of, you know, all of our analysis of the trademark claims and we've gone through trademark owners and registries and registrars, then we do the second pass to actually see if we've got the, you know, what the answers would be that we might propose or, you know, draft policy recommendations or operational fixes. that we would propose for the subteam. I'm not sure we can do it all on the first pass, and I think we're going to wind up wordsmithing recommendations right now. I'd much rather gather the data, and I don't know how other people feel, much rather say, is there data? Where are we seeing it? So Q11 goes into one of these boxes at the end of the spreadsheet. You know, what is it that's shedding light on the question? What data are we seeing? And then let's draw our final conclusions later. But if we do it all now, I think we're going to be here on 1A forever. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'm just going to point, this is Julie Hedlund from staff, point to a question in the chat. Mary Wong from staff has noted, can the group agree that the results show that the claims notice does affect the decision whether or not to proceed with the registration and that various reasons were cited by respondents for not proceeding? Got a couple people in queue. I've got Greg Shatton. I don't know if that's a new hand or old, and Susan Payne. Greg? Oh, and for some reason, I also, Phil Corwin had his hand up but wasn't showing up for me. I see Phil is actually showing up now before Susan. Phil and then Susan, please.
Yeah, thank you, Julie. Phil here, and these are personal views. And my personal view is that on these questions and perhaps on many of the other questions, I think it's fun to look at the data, but at a certain point early in the conversation for some of these questions, we ought to just admit that the data is inconclusive. It doesn't dictate any particular direction for us, and that the more important question is, all right, we know it's causing some potential registrants to pause, but then they go ahead. It's causing others to stop and not return. We don't know the division between folks who intended to infringe and those who would have gone forward with perfectly non-infringing domain registrations. And the real question is on the basis of the inconclusive data, but just also our experience with the new TLD program, the trademark claims notice is a notice. It's a bunch of words. And can we make the words better so that they're more targeted at putting potential infringers on notice, that they're putting themselves at risk and they're probably going to get found out and have legal action, while better explaining to less sophisticated registrants with no infringing intent that this may not apply to them, but so it's not telling them to stop completely, but that they probably should get some advice because this is a legal issue. So in the end, we're going to have to look at the language and say, can we improve the language that was adopted several years ago on the basis of our experience? Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Phil. I have Susan and then George Kirikos, and just the verbal reminder of what I put in the chat. We've agreed to adjourn these calls 5 minutes before the top of the hour to enable time for a switch over to the next sub-team. Susan and then George, please.
Thanks so much. Susan Payne. I didn't put my hand up to agree with Phil, but it turns out that that's exactly what I do want to do. I agree wholeheartedly with what Phil said, and I can see that there's a number of other people in the chat who are doing likewise. But I put my hand up to respectfully disagree with Kathy about this idea of going out and getting the data. And it seemed from the way that you were speaking, Kathy, that you're talking about going out and sourcing the data and gathering it into one place and so on and so forth. And it seems to me that that's exactly what we've already done and what staff have done in this table. Okay, there's some other random bits of data as well that we should also be looking at in this single path. But this idea that we have to, you know, keep wrangling this data in various different forms but never actually do anything with it is what's so frustrating. We've been wrangling the data and going out and looking for it for, you know, getting on for 3 years now. It's time for us to just finish this effort. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Susan. And George Kirikos, please.
George Kirikos, the transcript. Yeah, I just want to disagree with Phil's take on what the goal in all this is in terms of making slight improvements to the wording of the TMCH claims notice. I don't think that's necessarily objective at all, because the registries and the registrars were explicitly surveyed as to whether they'd prefer one or the other of the TMCH claims versus the Sunrise, or even the elimination of both. So those should be on the table, because presumably some of the trademark people, camp or whatever, would be in favor of extending, you know, the trademark claims to .com and .net and .org and other legacy GTLDs if it was deemed, quote, a success in terms of reducing cyber squatting. So I think we have to look at, you know, the overall picture in terms of, you know, whether this is a net benefit or a net negative on cyber squatting and registrations in general. I mean, it can reduce cyber squatting, but if it's at the cost of impacting good faith registrations, then we have to compare the benefits and the costs. Thank you.
Thank you, George. I have Susan Payne, please, and we have about 2 minutes left, so we'll need to wrap. Thank you.
Oh. Thanks very much. I can be really quick. To start talking about extending this to the legacy TLDs is a complete red herring. These are things that happen at registration when, you know, they're launch mechanisms for registries. The legacy TLDs have been going forever. We're not talking about that. So that's just a red herring to rile people up.
Thank you very much, Susan. And so, I'm going to, okay,
I have Phil. Phil, you can, Phil, you have the last word. Phil Corwin, please. And now I see Phil's
hand. My hand's not up.
Your hand was up, but now it's down.
But since I'm on the line, let me just say in response to George that it was implicit in my previous personal comment that the trademark claims would remain for a subsequent round. That doesn't mean that it's out of order for someone to propose its elimination or that there be a choice for contracted for registries to offer either Sunrise or claims, but not both. But personally, I would view those proposals as unlikely to gain consensus within the working group or the ICANN community. So I'm implicitly refining my comments to not dwell on things that I don't think can get consensus, but if others think they can get consensus, so be it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Phil. And so we're going to go ahead and close out this call at this point. Thank you all for joining today. We'll go ahead and capture some action items and the discussion thus far and suggestions for where we start on the next call, which will be the 2nd of January. And we'll identify the homework for the next call as well. So we'll send out agenda for that with homework just as we did last week, and you'll see that today. We'll send a reminder before the next call. Also, happy holidays to everybody. I wish you a very happy new year, and look forward to talking to you very shortly. Thanks all. Bye-bye. Bye.
And once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your year. Happy New Year.